Hey, everybody, and welcome to Indie Film Cafe. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody, and I'm here with...
Paulie Presenza, known as the Moo Cow. Moo!
And I'm also with...
Jess Chen.
All right, and we are going to be watching Roller Gator.
Woohoo!
Woohoo! All right, but before then, let's start that music. We're back with Roller Gator.
Yay!
Woo! All right. So since this was Paul's pick of the week, well, we'll let him take over.
Okay. So Roller Gator is a movie that was shot by Donald G. Jackson, the guy who gave the world Rollerblade and Hell Comes to Frogtown. He made this movie back in 1995, and then it was released in 1996. He is also one of the writers, along with Scott Shaw, who is a guy who is his creative partner, who's worked with him in the past in a lot of other movies. And then he was also, I think he's listed as Max X Lawrence as well, as writer in a few other spots too. That's just a pseudonym for himself. I'm not sure why he does that.
Why not?
Probably because he doesn't want, like, so many of them. You know, yeah. Like, he doesn't want to be listed. Donald G. Jackson does this. Donald G. Jackson.
Well, he's listed as Donald G. Jackson and, again, as Mad X Lawrence as writer. So that's the part I don't quite get. He's listed twice. But, you know, Donald G. Jackson kind of does his own thing. He's a little bit odd, and his movies are all a little bit odd. But that's okay. So this particular movie is about a small purple plastic wrapping alligator who is trying to save himself from being taken away and put into a carnival as a sideshow freak. And he gets his friends, namely PJ and Slingshot, to save him from the evil carnival guy played by Joe Estevez as Uncle Chi-Chi, and who utilizes the Dark Ninja to try to capture him and bring him back. And so that's basically the film in a nutshell there.
Well, I want to, like, also express to, like, audience members who may not have seen this movie – you said that he, like, had his, was it his friends? These are just people he randomly met. Like, right. These aren't people, like, that were his, like, friends that he just asked them to help him in his aid. They literally, he meets PJ in a cave, and we'll get to that in a bit. But he also meets Slingshot just randomly, or she meets Slingshot randomly while they're just, skating around. So,
well, you can't underestimate the charms of a plastic 2-foot-tall gator who raps. clearly, he's able to capture the hearts of everybody that he meets. But yes, you're right. So I guess what we should talk a little bit about is the characters. So there is the gator himself.
Baby Gator.
Yeah, he doesn't have a name. Everybody calls him Baby Gator, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So he's kind of like, I think I described him as sort of like Scrappy Doo from the Scooby Doo things. He's like that annoying kid brother that's, you know, I'm going to get him, rah, 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 rah. But he's only like very tiny and can't actually hurt anybody.
Can't actually move either.
Can't actually move.
Except for his mouth.
Oh, yeah. He's clearly a piece of plastic, guys. There's no scrubbing around that. The jaws kind of move sort of up and down, but the otherwise,
bounces.
Right, the legs and arms are not articulated at all. They're all part of the same plastic mold. And I think I described it as if, you know, you were to take your stuffed animal and make a movie just by
I've done that.
Moving it around. Yeah, that's pretty much the gator.
Been there, done that. We need a continuity monkey. The
continuity
movie.
Monkey.
The movie.
I know, we do.
Oh, no.
So Baby Gator is on the lam, and he's hiding in a cave. And so you see all of a sudden...
how does it get to the cave? Does that
we
ever...
We don't know.
There's never any explanation why he was there to begin with?
Nope.
But didn't he escape?
He escaped.
Okay.
We just don't know how.
Yeah.
Okay, so he escaped. Even though he can't move.
Right.
Literally, he can't move unless somebody picks him up. So somebody had to pick him up and take him to that cave?
Maybe it was the Dark Ninja.
Why would it... No, but the Dark Ninja, why would they just leave him there?
Because she's insane.
She is pretty insane. I don't know. I guess that would be the best
Yeah, I like Jen says, it's a bit of overthinking on our part. But
that's the fun part.
I know. So Baby Gator's in this cave, and he's calling out for help. And PJ, who's just kind of been relaxing on the beach and going in the water a little bit, and was about to turn on the radio and hears his calls. And so immediately, being the nice, sweet person that she is, she starts looking around saying, hey, somebody need help? What can I do for you? And he's like, you're getting warmer. Come in here.
He turns into instant creeper.
Yeah, he becomes a little creepy. And I think Jonathan pointed out last time that this is traditionally a setup for a horror film where you're going to get a young single female by herself following a voice into a cave is generally not a very safe and smart thing to do.
Yeah.
But in this case, instead of a monster jumping out and grabbing her, this little purple plastic alligator pops out and starts being snotty and bratty with her. You know, he's like, oh, you need to help me. I have the carnival owner's trying to take me back, booger breath, and just calling her all sorts of goofy names and, you know, just kind of being a pain in the ass, frankly. But, you know, eventually she sort of wears him down and he finally admits that he's really in trouble and he needs PGA to give him a hand. And, of course, since he's just a little 12-year-old gator, she agrees.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of the film there. And then as we find the next group of characters we meet is Uncle Chi-Chi or Mr. Dennis, played by Joe Estevez. He's the owner of the carnival. And you can tell he's the owner because Donald G. Jackson has filmed him wandering around the Santa Monica Pier pretending to be owning the place. He sort of talks to himself and talks to random people.
We talked about that. That's like one of my favorite scenes. It's just him just walking around saying, hi, hey, how are you doing over there? Oh, this is great. And he
get on one of the rides.
Yeah, and a couple of them.
Falls off of one of the rides.
It's like, funny.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because, like, I guess none of these people that are there, like, realize, like, who he is as an actor, right? They don't say, oh, it's Joe Estevez or whatever. But none of them also recognize him as the owner of the freaking park.
Yeah,
like,
no.
Nobody comes up to him and asks him for his nephew comes up and talks to him. I guess you're about to get into that.
Yeah, that's Reggie. And you know, and this goes back to something I was going to mention is that you know, this is the what he calls the Zen movies style filmmaking. You know, there is the guerrilla filmmaking style where you're sort of showing up and just making do with whatever's available, not really having a lot of stuff planned out in advance. And then there's the Zen filmmaking style, which Donald G. Jackson and his creative partner Scott Shaw have sort of taken to another level where they don't actually have scripts because in their mind, to have such things prepared ahead of time impinges on the instant creativity that's involved with making his films.
It's also a little lazy.
Well, it's very lazy, and you don't have to worry about paying people like, you know, writers and pre-prep people.
But he wrote it. Like you said, it was a script. So
yeah, well, he insisted this particular film was scripted. You know, I think I talked a little bit before about his past. You know, he made these other films, Rollerblade and such, and he was able to get some money up, and he was able to make Hell Comes to Frogtown, which kind of is the movie that he's famous for. But at this time, he was making a group of movies that were for kids, or you know, they were family movies, starting with Baby Ghost, going into Little Lost Sea Serpent, and then Roller Gator. And he insisted these movies were actually scripted. There's not a lot of evidence to that based on the film that we see. But.
Yeah, scripted is a loose word, right?
I don't know if it makes me feel better or worse for the film.
Yeah.
So Uncle Chi-Chi's there, and he's got his nephew, Reggie, who's played by Larry Maddox, and he's kind of like the dumb, likable buddy that's helping him along. And they are trying to capture Baby Gator to bring him back so that they can show him in, as part of a freak show in order to save the carnival. I guess they're not making enough money. And so...
It looks fine to me.
Yeah. Well, it's because of Santa Monica Pier.
Yeah.
So he has hired several people to go out and locate and bring back Baby Gator, one of which is this karate instructor who's mm-hmm. kind of a neutral character. She begins, you know, we first see her trying to grab the baby gator and follow Uncle Chi-Chi's instructions, but later has a change of heart. And then there is the dark ninja whom we see at the beginning, you know, sort of skulking. Yeah, skulking at the top of a mountain or top of a hill. Just sort of like out in plain sight in yeah, front of everybody.
Yeah, what was the point of that?
Dressed all in black.
Yeah, like, yeah, well, that doesn't make you stand out at all up at the pier. But, like, I just thought about that. Why is the person just sitting there at the pier? Like, obviously she knows she needs to be looking for this baby gator, but she's just sitting there. And even asks, like, at one point, he says, the baby gator says to BJ that, like, did you see the black ninja out there? And she was like, well, I haven't seen any, or, you know, I haven't been close to enough ninjas to know whether or not. But that looked like, that made me laugh. Oh, yeah. That was a great lie.
Well, all she needs is a big giant neon sign flashing, I'm a ninja, you know. Yeah,
everything is very.
The whole point of even though ninjas are something of a contrivance, you know, the whole point is that they're supposed to be secret and silent and stealthy.
Masters of disguise.
Yeah, and you're not supposed to see them or know them. And here she is clearly, you know, showing off to the world that she's a ninja.
She handled the Masters of Disguise bit later on, but I think we'll get to that later.
Right, she does use a magic ninja trick at one point.
Two magic ninja tricks.
Okay.
We'll get to that, you know, later, but...
You know. So that's those guys, and then of course there is Slingshot. She comes into the scene a little bit later on. She's also a friend, or becomes a friend of Baby Gator.
Becomes a friend because like
she just sort of appears too, doesn't she?
Yeah,
like, she just happens to be skating in the same ditch as everybody else.
But right. It's kind of funny because it kind of reminds me of like what you're like as a kid, you know? You're just wandering around and you see something going on and you get interested in it and then you come up there and you... That's how you meet new people sometimes.
Yeah,
and
kidnapped and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Hopefully you're not playing by the open storm sewers in Los Angeles, you know.
Or hoping you're not, like, slingshotting a rock into a ninja.
Right.
Like, that probably normally wouldn't go well, you know, right? Like, a ninja would probably be like, dude, I'm trying to capture this baby gator.
Right, right. You know? So, like I said, Joe Estevez is the guy who plays Uncle Chi-Chi, and he's famous. He's been in a million independent films, a lot of bad ones, too. But I think some of the ones that I mentioned before, Mystery Science Theater's version of Werewolf.
And Roller Gator. And Riff Trax's Roller Gator.
Right, Riff Trax's Roller Gator. Rollerblade 7, which he also made with Donald G. Jackson, Guns of El Chupacabra, Vampire Boulevard. He's been in a ton of movies. And then the other character that we haven't discussed yet is Swampy the Swamp Farmer, who's played by Uncle Conrad
Swampy.
Brooks, everybody's favorite, Plan 9 from Outer Space, a whole slew of Ed Wood movies, and the Plan 9 remake.
And his nickname really is Swampy in there.
Absolutely.
I don't know if that's his real name or that's his nickname.
I think they mentioned, he mentioned somewhere along the line that Beauregard was
That's right. True.
But he calls him Swampy on another occasions, too. So, I don't know. Maybe he's got two names.
Maybe his real name is Beauregard and his nickname is Swampy.
Well, you know, it didn't seem like Conrad Brooks was playing Swampy with a whole lot of marbles left in his head. So, it's possible that he just either forgot or just didn't matter.
It didn't matter.
Yeah, I think it's crucial to the plot.
And the thing about it is, PJ was played by Sandra Shurker. And she hadn't really acted before professionally.
She she wasn't horrible.
No.
You know, she was pretty good. I liked her. She brought a lot of, charm to the movie.
Right. She was very sweet. She's a very sweet character. And she's kind of the beating heart of the film. But she and then the person who played Slingshot, which is Jeanette Lynn Hawkins, and the person who played the Dark Ninja, who is Lisa Koch, these guys just haven't really worked, and they didn't really work afterwards. So clearly, Donald G. Jackson was just utilizing people that he found.
Right.
You know.
And that's what you do in independent films, generally. Right. If you don't have money, you can't hire, you can only hire Joe Estevez, you know, and stuff. And, I mean, I don't know how much he paid Joe Estevez, but you know, he made, you know, he...
Pork rinds and stale beer?
He got him something. He had to have gotten something. Yeah. I don't think he would have done this for free. Maybe he would have. I don't know.
Well, it's possible. They definitely had a working relationship, and I know he's worked in a number of other films. So it's possible. And then Conrad Brooks, he's also been in a number of his films. But it's just nice to see the three of them together in one film. It's sort of a stinky movie, independent film come true in that regards. So we have PJ helping Baby Gator escape. And so at one point they're along the side of the sewers, and that's where they run into Slingshot. Slingshot helps them against the Dark Ninja because she shoots her with a pebble. Slingshot, because that's why she's named Slingshot.
And the Dark Ninja just literally stops and just gives up.
Yeah, she's a terrible ninja. Terrible. Worst ninja in movie history.
Yeah, probably. Easily.
At one point where she skates by and just sort of reaches out to grab Baby Gator and misses and just goes by.
Gently skates by.
I missed. Oh, yes. Dear. How inconvenient.
Yeah.
Some other day.
Her roller skating skills leave much to be desired.
I'm going back to the beach.
Oh, yeah. So, like, the big chasing that happens on the sewer, on the side of the sewer there, it's like, you know, 4 miles an hour at most. It's pretty tame.
It's ridiculous.
But
I don't want to fall off the skateboard.
Yeah.
Skateboarding. I can do that.
We meet this other lady who comes up and says she's a friend of, of PJ's and everything. And it makes no sense. She's a friend, but she's like much older.
That's mom jeans. I like to call her mom jeans.
Yeah.
And that's a good one.
Yeah, so yeah. She's there, and she's like, oh, this is PJ's pack. You must be PJ's friend. She called, and I'm here to help, and then they sort of go back and forth about it. And then it turns up that Slingshot, that little minx, had it all planned out so that if she stole the backpack, which she did, it turned out it was just a bunch of vegetables, and the Dark Ninja doesn't like vegetables.
It made no sense, like, literally, because... She could have just not. I guess it was a decoy because
they had a plan to get away from.
Right. So she wore the backpack, and then the woman comes up there and is obviously the ninja, which we figured out was played by the same person, but I couldn't believe it because they look like two different figures.
It's the eyebrows. Mom jeans.
And it must be the mom jeans. I don't know. But she comes up there, she says, you know, blah, 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 and the girl's like, oh, no, I'm not supposed to be giving this backpack to anybody. And then she's like, you know, oh, it's okay. And they argue for, like, literally 5 minutes. Like, that's what it felt like. It was like, come on now, let's move the plot along a little bit. And then so she goes, okay, fine. So she takes the thing, and then it turns out when she hands it over, it's the Dark Ninja. Who goes out and, you know, tries to take it away, but it's vegetables. And she hates vegetables.
That's what she
says. It was a good thing that PJ had an extra backpack.
That's right.
A bunch of celery and a head of lettuce.
As you do when you're wandering around Los Angeles.
That's what I do. Every time I go to, like, a theme park,
because you never know. You never know when the Dark Ninja is going to come after you.
And she hates vegetables.
That's right.
It would have been probably better. I mean, I know that, once again, overthinking, but it would have probably been better if they had established, like, beforehand that she hated vegetables, right? Like, something happened, like, she was trying to get away from her, so she threw a lettuce at her and something, and she was, I hate vegetables, right? So then when it happened again, it would be funny because, you know, like, they know now, oh, she hates vegetables.
Yeah, there's a lot of untapped potential there that could be shown up in Roller Gator 2, which they promised us at the end of the movie. You know, maybe they could do a combination of VeggieTales and Roller Gator.
I'll direct it. Scott, just, you know, make it happen. I'll direct it. We'll get Joe Estevez to come back. He's still around.
God, I hope so.
Jeez.
But, yeah, poor Conrad Brooks. I mean, there are several times where they are clearly showing him stomping through the storm sewer along the side of the highway.
He fell in.
He falls in a few times. It doesn't look very comfortable. But you know, he's being a trooper. You know, he's just doing what he's being told and just doing the best he can.
And talking to himself.
Talking to himself.
Literally, just talking to, like, obviously he's talking to the camera, right? So it's supposed to be like breaking the fourth wall. But it's so weird how they do it that it's just like, is he talking to himself or is he talking to the camera? Is he talking to, I mean, the audience, you know, or what is he doing? Like, right. I can't even tell. He's just kind of just talking, you know.
Although there is a twisted logic behind it because Baby Gator does mention the fact that Swampy is kind of nuts.
Yeah.
So talking to himself is probably not out of the question.
I wonder if they did that, like, after they shot all of Conrad's scenes. They're like, man, he looks really nuts right now. Let's, you know, let's make a line about that.
Right.
You know?
I mean, I doubt they shot this in order. But clearly they brought out Conrad Brooks for like one day. And you can see, at least in a few of the shots, that it was towards the end of the day, too. Mm-hmm. It was definitely getting dark. And I can probably imagine that he wanted to go home and clean up and take a shower and go back home.
Oh, yeah.
They might have had Joe Estevez for a day, but they might have had him for more because it felt like he – like what I was really impressed by the movie was that he was throughout the whole movie.
Oh, yeah.
You know, right? But it wasn't even like he was throughout it like once, you know, 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there, and 5 minutes there. Mm-hmm. He's like literally throughout the whole thing. So I was kind of impressed that they were able to get him for that long. And he – I mean, even with bad lines, he can still deliver it and, you know.
Absolutely, in a convincing way. I completely bought him as Uncle Chi-Chi. So, yeah. I mean, he's kind of a sniveling coward as far as a villain goes.
Yeah. Right. But I think that was the point.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, like, even the karate instructor said he was a wimp, so.
That's right.
Karate instructor, yeah.
Yeah, she mentions that he has other people doing his dirty work for him.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I like about the movie, I mean, it does get kind of slow at some points during like the beginning of the movie, but then it picks up pace when she starts to meet all the new people. Like the next day is more exciting and more stuff going on. But I think for a little bit they were just trying to figure out stuff to put into the movie to make it a little bit like that. There's still some story there, mm-hmm. So you try to get some character development between. The Gator himself and PJ, which I think worked really well.
Oh yeah,
we talked about this before that you know that basically the thing I like about you know these kind of movies is if they're able to take a character, the main character, who in this case is a freaking 3 foot or even smaller 2 foot you know baby gorilla. Baby Gator.
Baby Gator.
Wrong movie.
Yeah, different movie altogether. Baby Gator, and he has like a character. He is a character. He is, and by the end of it, he's kind of changed.
Right, he's grown.
He's grown as a person. And a lot of times, indie films, and we talked about this, indie films, they don't have that. You know, there's no growth. The
right.
character
no
stays
change.
The same completely, never changes whatsoever. And that is, like, you know, that is the sign of bad writing. And at least this, they grow. Like, I'm not going to say any names, but there are some movies that I've watched that where by the end of it, nobody learns anything. Nobody's, you know, changed. And their personalities are really boring.
Right.
This movie, at least all of those are, you know, the way that they should be done. Their personality is like king on this.
Right. And it's an interesting thing because you can look at this film as a sort of in the tone that it's shot and that it's for kids. And it's obviously it's meant for kids. But as far as a character study goes, you can look at it and say that the whole movie is really sort of the quest for Baby Gator to sort of improve himself and grow. Because he starts off as a real snotty little brat initially, especially to PJ.
I'm sorry, but he is still kind of somewhat.
Oh, I know.
Like, for a while. It was till the end that he starts to kind of.
Right.
You know, do the change a little bit.
Right.
Or whatever.
But at least,
but
you know.
He stops calling. He starts off calling her all kinds of names.
Right.
And she's like, I'm leaving you if you're going to continue.
Right.
But as far as a character study goes, you can look at it that this is the movie is basically his quest to improve and to grow. And that people like PJ and even to a certain extent Slingshot are sort of there to help him along.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, they're the ones who facilitate the change, and even Swampy to some degree.
To some extent. But you know, Slingshot, you know, just a lot of these are just devices to kind of move the story along, more or less, than a character that, you know, you can, like, you can't connect with Slingshot. You can't connect with the karate instructor. You can't connect with Swampy, really, because you don't really have enough time with him to develop, like, emotional feelings. Like, if he had literally died in the movie, which he doesn't, but, you know, I guess spoilers, whatever, but he doesn't die in the movie.
Nobody dies. Nobody dies. It's not that kind of film.
You know, but if he had died, you would be sad. In this particular thing, if anybody died, you probably wouldn't be sad. You would just be like, okay, that just happened.
Right. No, I think the worst thing that happens is the clowns steal the taffy. That's about it.
The clowns steal the taffy.
Poor Jenny.
I love that. Okay, that's the best line in here.
And I think at one point Reggie says that he has to untie the elephant's tails.
Oh, yes, untie their trunks. And then Mr. Dennis says, make sure you get the correct end of the elephant, assuming that, that he tried to.
There are a lot of bad jokes in this. I'm not going to lie.
When you can hear it.
There are some, you know, forehead-slapping moments aplenty in this
dad
film.
Jokes.
All right, so we're going to talk about the cinematography and editing of this film.
Oh, dear.
And cinematography.
It's okay, Paul. It's okay. Breathe.
This was Paul's least favorite thing in the world, and he's going to talk to you about it.
So, you know, if you can get past the whole movie centered around a piece of plastic that you're animating because it can't move and it's not articulated, if you can get past all that, that's fine. But the fact is, you know, there's a lot of moments in the film that, you know, where the focus is bad and you can see the lens hood in the corner.
That drove him nuts.
It just drove me nuts.
I didn't notice it until you pointed it out.
I know. It's
like every single scene, though.
Outside scene, yeah.
And like I said, it's not like Donald G. Jackson is new to this. He had worked with James Cameron. He had worked with some other folks. He worked in Troma. He did some shooting for them. He did some shooting on Terminator. So it's not like the man doesn't know how to work a camera. Mm-hmm. So this kind of stuff is just, to me, sloppy and inexcusable. Yeah. Maybe you don't see it until the post-production end of it, but you can crop it. You can do things to sort of get past that. So that was a big mistake. And then the second big mistake, if you ask me, is the music. The overbearing soundtrack, which consists of two songs. There's like sort of random noodling that goes on.
Throughout the whole movie.
Yeah.
And then there's another song for, it's more action scenes, like da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. That's kind of a cool one, but the noodling is just...
You're just excited that there's something new.
Yeah. Well, like, oh my God. There's a change in the music.
And unfortunately, it's also very, very loud. So it drowns out an awful lot of dialogue, which, you know, that may not necessarily be a bad thing in this case, but it's just overbearing. And I have shown this movie to a lot of people, and I have shown it to a lot of veteran stink movie watchers, and this movie has broken them simply because of the music.
Saying that, what does that mean?
Veterans?
No, I mean...
Folks that have seen a lot of those movies with
me. No, I mean, what do you mean that it broke them?
As in literally they got on the ground and turned into a fetal position and said, I can't take it anymore.
Like throughout, like in the middle of it?
Yeah.
Like, so they never finish it?
Nope.
Wow. I could finish the movie.
I could see someone getting really frustrated, especially if you want to hear the dialogue. Mm-hmm. Like, you know that there's some kind of joke happening. You know that something is being said when you can't hear. It's very frustrating. And this isn't... Now, the music throughout here, it's not like it's really good music. It's not like you have your favorite radio station on, so you don't really care what the words are. This is annoying guitar, bland, boring strumming going on.
I think I mentioned that normally when there's background music, I don't even notice it, you know.
If it's good, then you don't.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, I've never really liked the Hollywood way of manipulating the audience by putting in sappy music or to sort of cue what's going to happen by being too suspenseful or whatever. I don't like being manipulated like that. But on the other hand, I also don't like it when the music is just layered on so much that it just drowns everything else out. And that's really a problem with this film. You know, it's like they said that they got the rights to this music and they are just going to use it and get their money's worth, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, hold on 1 second. Can we take a break real quick?
Sure.
Okay, break.
We're back.
Yay, right. Technical difficulties. Ray Continuity Monkey was asleep at the switch.
All right, but we got everything going, so there we go. So anyway,
well, one thing you didn't mention with cinematography was how everything was shot by a 4-foot.
Yeah, that's right. It seemed like the way the angle of the shoot for a lot of the film, it seemed like it was like Roller Gator's own little 3-foot tall brother.
Yeah.
You're constantly looking up at people, up at their noses. Mm-hmm. You're seeing a lot of things like the telephone wires and such, mm-hmm. In the background that you really shouldn't be seeing. So yeah, the angle is kind of odd, and I'm not sure why that is.
Unless you're trying not to get other people in the shot, because that's what it almost seems like or feels like in a couple of these scenes is
right.
We're in a park, but we want to make sure there's no other people, so we have to angle it up.
Exactly. So there could be people or kids in the background. It's for all we know. Who knows? It's hard to tell.
Yeah. But, you know, as far as the cinematography goes, it's not horrible. You can see the people, you know.
That's always a good thing.
I mean, you know what I mean? Like, they're not out of, like, the framing isn't awful, you know, and, like, obnoxious or anything. Like, you can't, like, not sideways or, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's a good frame of a thing. It's just, unfortunately, it feels like if they don't have a small person, they have it on a tripod, and they just don't have a tripod that can go up, you know, or whatever. Yeah. So it could be that.
Yeah, they probably utilized whatever they could have.
I mean, it is what it is, right? You know, like
it's a movie about a 2-foot tall plastic alligator. What are we going to do here?
Purple
alligator. And he mentions Barney in it.
Yeah, he does.
I groaned.
Yeah, well, there's a comparison there because of the color.
The color is the only comparison. One's a dinosaur and one's a talking gator that doesn't move at all.
Right. You know? Does not articulate. I think Barney's even worse, though.
Barney's annoying.
Barney is always worse.
Yeah, Barney is always worse, you know. But yeah, so as far as like, we got cinematography, we did music.
Talked about the dialogue being drowned out occasionally by the noodling guitar score.
The sound, I mean, sound wasn't too bad except for the music.
Were there other sounds?
Right. And the dialogue, there are times when you can't really make out the dialogue at all.
Yeah. And that happens to a lot of indie films. You know, you're gonna get run into that. Mm-hmm. Even big independent film or Hollywood movies do that.
But at least this one, I mean, it appears that it's all live synced. It's not dubbed in later, which you see in a lot of independent films because they simply can't afford to have the better sound equipment.
Editing wasn't too bad.
No, the editing's not so bad. You know,
like, it feels like a movie, you know, being like shot from one scene to another scene. You mean?
I mean,
like,
there are
kind of sad. Like a movie.
If anything, clearly there's a lot of padding in the film. So, you know, there's obviously parts where it's edited in such a way as to sort of maximize some of the stuff that really doesn't need to be maximized, just to pad the movie out. There are some. Especially the first quarter. It seems like the first quarter of the entire film is them wandering around the Santa Monica Pier, which they could shoot for free because it's public space, and they were going to utilize it, so they did, even though not really much was happening.
I want to ride on some of the rides.
Yeah.
That's funny.
That's always fun.
It would have been a nice place to shoot. The only problem I have, the locations... There was only like 4 locations, I think, is what we counted.
Like that.
So there's the beach, the carnival, the pier, and a house, a random house, and a cave. So 5.
And then there's a lot of stuff that happens on the open sewer.
Oh, sewer, yeah. Right.
And we have the little office part.
In the office.
With the desk that has those foam puzzle pieces on the side.
And the clear phone.
And the clear phone. Oh, yes.
Very 90s. Very early 90s.
Oh, yes. I love the clear phone with the purple cord. Pink cassette radio?
Pink cassette radio. Got to have that.
Yep. So, and his ponytail. I have to tell you, one of the things that annoyed me is his damn ponytail.
It's not very big, is it?
Mr. Dennis, cut off that little crappy ponytail. Because you can't tell from the front. And then when he turns to the side, you're like, wait, did I see a ponytail or not? No, it's there.
It's a small little ponytail.
It's awful, though.
It's like almost like a rat tail kind of thing. You
except
know?
It's not even that long.
No. It's bad. Just bad.
Yeah. Sorry, Joe Estevez. Whoever did your hair and makeup needs to be fired.
Well, that's okay. I imagine they did not have somebody there. I think they just showed up with whatever it is that they're wearing, and that's about it. Because I doubt there's even makeup.
I would have loved to be a fly on the wall of that day. Like, he shows up, and then Donald G. Jackson's like, I like your hair.
Oh, yeah. I would love to see this re-released in Blu-ray and have Scott Shaw do some comments on there. I'm sure there's all kinds of great stories about this film.
Yeah. I mean, get back Sandra Shuker to do some commentary.
Yes, please bring back Sandra Shuker.
She's obsessed about this. Yeah, I mean, I would, you know, I think she's a cutie pie.
Absolutely. And she's it's just amazing. And then, you know, I think I mentioned that she reminded me a lot of Kirstie Swanson.
When I
did a little research and I started to read some of the other reviews of this film, a lot of the people said the same thing. They all wanted to get their hands on that purple alligator, the prop self. And we can only imagine that Scott Shaw actually has that purple alligator at this point.
So if you want that purple alligator, you go to 1555.
Yes. Well, Scott has it because unfortunately when Donald G. Jackson passed away, he ceded all the rights to all of his stuff to Scott Shaw. And so you can actually buy a lot of the movies and a lot of other things on his website. And I can only hope that he's got that purple alligator somewhere. Because at the end of the film, they do promise us Roller Gator 2.
Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah, Electric Boogaloo. So one can only hope someday that Scott Shaw is going to make that film for us because the public demands it.
Now, if you do, Scott, if you are listening right now and you do plan to do Roller Gator 2, please let the baby gator be roller skating or something.
Absolutely.
I do not. That's the one thing that annoyed me about this movie is I thought I was going to see a roller skating gator. I was excited, man. I thought that would, you know.
At least a skateboarding gator.
Yeah.
Something, he's got to be rolling in some way or another. I mean, he's rolling on the back of the backpack or whatever, but, like, that was it.
Well, and he was in the pram as well.
Oh, yeah. That scene, you forgot to mention that lady, that random lady that, and as a character.
Yeah, well, she's only in the film for, like, 30 seconds at most.
But she isn't on rollerblades.
Right.
She's pushing her baby in the stroller.
Right. And so what happens is little baby Gator's sick of being in the bag, so he decides he's going to get in there. And so when she takes the baby out, he somehow leaps from the bag all the way across the sewer into the thing. And then PJ comes up and just starts pushing him along like it ain't nothing.
They just steal a pram.
At least the baby wasn't in it.
Yeah, she didn't even look that, like, upset or whatever that he had done that. Like,
no.
Like this is something they do in a normal, like, situation. Yeah. Like, oh, I'm just going to hop in here and you can just take me along. That's what I want.
So there you go. PJ's not a Mary Sue. She has a dark side.
She does. She's a thief. She's a pram thief, you know.
And like I said, it's kind of a shame that she didn't do more stuff. I'd be very curious to see her actually do some more work.
I'd like to see what she looks like now. She was a cutie then. Like, imagine when she's, you know, this age now, you know, like, she's probably still adorable.
Most likely. But, you know, like I said, I often obsess over character actors who appear in just one film memorably, and then I wonder what happened to them the rest of their life.
Right. We talked about that in Suburban Sasquatch.
That's right.
So, you know, it's, I'm sure it'll come again, too. You'll,
and because she's, you know, clearly not in the business, I'd be very interested to see, to hear from her what kind of story she had with regards to working with Donald Jackson, with acting opposite a piece of plastic that she had to pretend was an actual living creature.
With Donald Jackson behind her, right. And you can actually
doing the voice.
Head.
Yeah, there's one part where you definitely can see hair on the top of a head in the corner.
Yeah, so, and then I think we mentioned too that part of the reason why this movie doesn't really work for kids, even though the tone is good, is the fact that it is a 60-year-old guy making a movie for kids and thinking he understands what the kids like
these days,
like, you know, rollerblades and roller skating and rap. And he has just a very, you know, middle-aged white male's version of what rap is. And it's terrible.
And for a 12-year-old kid, you know, 12-year-old Gator, he's pretty, you know,
lame.
Yeah. Like, he's not the hip Gator, you know. He's the old-time Gator.
Right. He's like I said, he's like Scrappy. He's trying too hard, and he just makes himself into a pain in the ass, and people don't really like him, at least at first.
Okay, so we're watching this as we talk, and they're getting to the point where it's the chase scene. Where the dark ninja is chasing after PJ and the Gator on a skateboard, gets knocked off by Slingshot,
and one shot,
lucky shot. Even though it took her two shots a lot the next time, you know, I don't know what the deal was with there, but anyway, the first shot, you know, knocks the Dark Ninja off. Dark Ninja gives up, whatever, right? And then Slingshot tries to be, you know, she doesn't even get a thanks, really, from, you know, like, she just saved her freaking butt.
Acknowledgement at first.
Not
they
at
just
first.
Continue skating on for a while, and then it's like, oh, there's this person following me. I should probably acknowledge her and
it's
thank
like
her.
She has to get Baby Gator out of the danger zone. You know?
Yeah, she thinks, well, she can't trust anybody. Think about
That's
it.
That's true.
She can't trust anybody because everybody seems to be, like, coming after this Gator, trying to bring it over, you know? Like, who knows who else this guy
and
has.
And even Baby Gator says, maybe this is all part of an elaborate plot. And he sort of goes off on that, and she has to smack him on his little plastic head.
I loved it when she smacked him.
I know. So like I said, she's not a Mary Sue. She has a bit of a temper.
Yeah, right? Like, she's just following her around.
And unlike PJ, I have to say this for Slingshot, she's thinking of her safety by wearing her knee pads.
Oh, yeah, and wrist guards.
And wrist guards.
Yep.
And
very
wrist
good.
Guards. Wow, yeah.
Helmets, though.
But, yeah, so, I mean, that's kind of what her whole purpose is to sort of be a tool that assists when needed, almost like a deus ex machina. But, you know, there's a little bit more to her as well. It would have been interesting if we found out a little bit more about Slingshot. Like, for one thing, how old is she? Is she like 12, 13? She looks older. She looks like somebody who's
maybe 15.
I think she's more like 18 playing 13.
I don't think
so. Yeah, she definitely looks like an older person
I think so, too.
You think so?
Yeah, I think
maybe.
So.
I don't know. I would believe her as a, like, 14, 15-year-old or whatever.
Well, yeah, she's kind of petite, and she does kind of come off as one of those roller skating kids, but she's another one that I would love
she probably
to...
probably was a roller skating kid.
Yeah, and I'm sure that's why they're both in the movie, because Donald G. Jackson saw them skating around and said, I'm going to put them in a movie. But
see, doesn't that sound creepy?
Yeah, of course.
Like, if you think about it. Like,
you guys are, oh, I want to see what's happened with them now.
Hey, with them now, that's not creepy because, you know, they're like, you know, in their 40s or something.
Well, but I just would love to hear what their experiences
were.
I know,
I'm teasing y'all.
I know. But hey, you know, as a photographer who goes out and I will on occasion meet a complete stranger and just say, hey, I would love to take a picture. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it's not creepy.
That does come off a little bit.
It's worked more often than not.
Yeah, right. You have to be careful how you say it.
Right, and I usually have a card with me, and you know. I make it as uncreepy as possible. But it's worked more times than not, I have to say. So I can understand the way he's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
But I would love to find out from both of these young ladies what their experience was. And
so if you're out there, let us know.
Absolutely.
Check us out on Indie Film Cafe. Hit us up. Twitter us. Whatever.
Sandra Shurka and Jeanette Lynn Hawkins. Give us some info.
They're not as creepy as they sound. Don't worry.
And I'm sure.
I don't think Jen would be hanging out with us so much.
Oh, or Continuity Monkey.
Yeah, well, I do have the knife stash aside, so.
There's another one, too.
But I'm sure Scott Shaw has some, either production notes or something. So if they could ever get up to releasing a Blu-ray version of Roller Gator with commentary, I would be all over that.
Yeah, definitely.
A making of. Maybe there's some footage back there somewhere that the public hasn't seen. That'd be awesome.
That would be pretty cool. I would definitely listen to the commentary.
I'd even love to hear what happened with Larry Maddox, the guy who played Reggie. Like I said, he actually contributes some of the lyrics at the end of the film to the Roller Gator song. And then he wrote another independent film called Raw Target, which I remember. I don't remember seeing it so much as I remember it being out there. And I'd be curious to see what happened to him, too. Maybe he's still in the business.
Maybe that's on Amazon. Maybe we can look that up and use that as a movie one day.
Or, of course, obviously, we'd love to get the hold of Joe Estevez. So maybe someday if we get to meet him in a con, which is certainly possible, we could ask him about it just to see what he'd have to say about his time working with a plastic 2-foot rapping alligator and what he thought.
Yeah, his scenes with Baby Gator were fun.
Absolutely.
But then, that's the other thing I really kind of was bummed about is, like, he just spends most of the time, the rest of the time in the office. He doesn't go out and try to, catch. Like, he's, like, the laziest villain. That
he is a lazy
had.
Villain.
He kind of just is like.
But it fits his character. It's just like the karate instructor says. He gets other people to do his dirty work for him.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But he tried. He tried. He got Reggie to basically kidnap, or have the, not kidnap, but have the gator come in there and talk to him. So, I don't know. He's interesting.
Yeah, poor Reggie, he's just, just wants to have a better job than being hot dog boy. And he'd love to have PJ maybe meet him for a hot dog somewhere. But she has no interest in him.
Oh, my God. That stuff was hilarious. That was the most awkward.
I'd rather kiss goat cheese. Oh, you like that stuff too?
I forgot that.
Something
line.
About his hand smelling like hot dogs.
Oh yeah. Because he was like, "Is there some reason you keep bumping into me with your hot dog fingers?" And he's like, "Hey, these fingers have been in boiling water all day long. They are germ free."
Yeah, he says somehow they may have ketchup and mustard, right. Or may have ketchup, relish.
Maybe a bit of relish.
Oh my God, that part I was not understanding what he was talking about. Like, I think it was just because the music was
it's that another instance where the music was just layered over it so much.
But I was just like, he's talking about relish and mustard. Like, this dude just keeps going on about hot dogs. Like, can he, he's wiener obsessed, and not in a good way.
People tend to be.
But not in a good way, whatever,
Well, I think it's fair to say, too, I think I mentioned before, Brad Corbett from Mystery Science Theater and Riff Tracks says that Roller Gator is the worst movie that Riff Tracks ever did a riff on. So, and I find that hard to believe because there are some pretty bad films. And I'm thinking Santa Claus Meets Ice Cream Bunny. I'm thinking Fun in Balloon Land.
There's not a lot in this, to make... I mean, there's a lot to make fun of, but then there's a lot of just empty
and there's
space.
There's a lot of parts that I think some people find boring. I think that's the problem.
I think that's the big problem because the thing that I think really messes this movie up is usually if you're doing a bad movie, you have to go one way or the other. You have to be really campy and silly and goofy or really boring, kind of thing, right? Those are the only two options that most people have. And then when it's a movie like this that isn't campy at all enough, and is more boring than it should be, it kind of goes into, the middle line. So, I can kind of see why, but honestly, I don't think it's the worst movie of all time or anything.
Oh, no, no, no.
And it's, like, by far, like, I think we've seen, like, we've seen some movies, you know.
Oh, that, far worse than this.
That yeah. are far worse than this, but we're not going to go into that because it's mean.
I know. But what I like about this film in particular that a lot of other films don't have is because of the whole tonality that it's shot for kids. It's got a lot of innocence to it. It's kind of sweet and kind of silly and kind of ridiculous. And, you know, I don't know. It's just a fun little world to be in for an hour and a half. I wouldn't mm-hmm. want to be there longer just from the music alone.
Yeah.
Just imagine if you were sleeping and this was on. That's mainly what you'd be hearing. You'd be having, like, bad nightmares and shit about that music.
I know.
So, basically, I need to steal y'all's phone and put it as your ringtone.
Why would you do that?
But I did like that other music wasn't too bad. Da-na-na-na-na, da-na-na-na-na-na. That was kind of cool. And I think I mentioned before, it reminded me a little bit of the music in the Wang Wang movie, the Fear Height Only. Where it's just that one piece of Bond music they use over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, and I think I told you before, too, that I think like this movie is very much like For Your Height Only. Like, mm-hmm. It has, like, a lovable charm that both movies have.
Absolutely.
Like, the character, both short, have,
and
like,
plastic.
These... Well, not Wang Wang. Wang was not plastic.
No, he wasn't. He was real.
He was very animate. He was running around doing this and that, you know, doing karate, nut punches.
Well, at 2'9", he's probably an inch or two shorter than Roller Gator.
Yeah. Wow. See, if there was a Wang Wang versus Roller Gator movie, I would have wanted to see that.
Oh, my God. If Wang Wang were alive, he could have paid him to wear the Roller Gator suit. How awesome would that have been?
No, there's
no suit. They'd have to make a suit.
They'd have to make a suit.
That'd be awesome, man. But then he can move his arms.
Right, live action.
Right? It wouldn't just be the head. Wouldn't be able to do that.
He could do his own kung fu.
His head was,
Gator Fu, I'm telling you.
Gator
no,
Fu.
No, no.
Scott, there's your mission.
No.
Make a Gator Fu movie.
I would watch that.
I would watch that.
Roller Gator Fu.
Hell yeah. Maybe he can fight some of the frogs from Hell Comes the Frog Town.
That's the perfect title of it. Roller Gator 2, Gator Fu.
Right.
Because it rhymes. There you go.
And, we can rap about it, too.
We should.
You just did.
We should mention. We should mention that Toad Warrior does show up, really for no other reason than to just kind of be a cameo, because the next movie that he ended up shooting was Toad Warrior. And then, of course, in the Toad Warrior movie, Roller Gator himself makes a cameo. So it's, you know, showing up in each other's films.
All right, do you know this answer or do you not know it? I'm going to ask it.
The answer is yes.
You will find out. The big question is, did he make Toad Warrior after he thought, like, did he come up with it on the set of this movie and he thought, that would be interesting to do as my next movie, or did that just, you know.
I'm sure Scott Shaw could give us the answer to that, but my feeling is that he probably had Toad Warrior already in mind and that he was using the money that he was getting from making these kid films in order to make the movies that he really wanted to do, which is Toad Warrior. So
I mean, they mentioned Frogtown in this movie. Mm-hmm. They mentioned
Little Lost Sea Serpent.
Sea Serpent. They mentioned, I mean, they have Toad Warrior. So he definitely, like, has, like, this movie right here already kind of solidifies the universe that Donald G. And he did this way before, like, even Marvel started doing that and all this.
I told you, it's kind of a weird, twisted logic, but it all makes sense in the Donald G. Jackson universe.
You could, like, marathon a bunch of these movies, and I think that they would all make sense in some way or another, like that. You know, if you watch them separately, they make less sense. If you watch them all together, it probably blows your mind.
Right, and I think I mentioned, too, before, that there is an actual place called Frogtown in Los Angeles where it's very swampy and the drainage is poor You know, and like, came up the, right, and that when he had moved from Michigan to L.A., he was struck immediately by the fact that everybody was roller skating or skateboarding around, and so why not put that in his films? And that's why those tropes are constantly in his movies.
So was roller, you would know the answer to this, but did Rollerblade 1 take place in Frogtown?
No, but it would have been shot in generally the same area. He pretty much shot all those movies in the same LA area. In that case, he used some Endicott period war forts there, like at Fort Monroe. And of course the whole open sewer next to LA.
Cool.
So yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah, I would love to like learn more about his films and just because they're
one of the cool things that I picked up from the Scott Shaw has a lot of interviews up on his webpage too, and one of the last interviews that Donald G. Jackson gave in 2003, he talks a little bit about the fact that originally in Hell Comes to Frogtown, he was going to have two actors from Rollerblade, Sam Mann. And Sabrina Solari, that they were going to be the leads in Hell Comes to Frogtown, but New Line Cinema are the ones who actually bankrolled that, and they kind of stepped in and made a lot of changes that he didn't like, and that was one of the things that sort of he didn't really want to work with the big group, the big companies anymore. As he says, paying the devil because, you get the movie made, but at the same time, they sneak in and kind of do their creative things that they want to do. Uh-huh. And he didn't really want to necessarily cast it with Roddy Piper or with Sandal Bergman, although it worked out in the end.
Oh, Roddy was great.
Right.
From what I've understood.
They wanted names. They didn't really want people that he had worked with. And I think he mentioned the fact that I think Sam Mann was not happy about that. And it's kind of a shame, although we understood. And the only reason I bring up the whole thing with Sam Mann is that he's also in a couple of other movies that at some point we're going to do for Indie Film Cafe.
But he's not in this one.
But he was not in this one, at least unless he was in the crew. I don't think he was in this one. Because by 1996, I'm not really sure where he was at this point. He was more of an 80s guy with Donald G. Jackson. Now, I know Scott Shaw was there. He was, he was the producer, I believe, of this particular film. And he was involved in all the other ones as well. So, I don't know. Again, I'd love to hear some commentary. I'd love to see this re-released. The fact that Riff Trax has actually covered this film is amazing because 10 years ago, 15 years ago, I was just about the only person I knew that knew Roller Gator and had a copy of it. And now it's got a little bit more, spotlight. Yeah. Right.
Which is great. I mean, them saying this is the worst movie, that attracts people to want to go see it. Because they're like, what is the worst movie of all time? Oh, Roller Gator, I got to watch it. And this is not a bad movie for you people to say, oh, this is going to be... some of it doesn't make any sense, but...
Well, I think Jen's right. I think the hardness to make riffs on it. I know when they got when I got the Mystery Science Theater book and what's his name? The guy who was playing TV's Frank. He made a fact. He made a point that the worst movie that they ever did was Monster a Go Go, and most people think, oh, it's got to be Manos Hands Away. No, turns out Manos was much easier to riff. Monster a Go Go has just big, giant, long sections where nothing happens, and it's very difficult to sit through. And I can't imagine riffing on that.
Having to watch it so many times.
Oh my God, nothing happens. Yeah. So that would be difficult. So I can see how some people might find Roller Gator to be a very difficult one to have to endure or to have to riff.
Right.
But I loved it. And this is one I show a lot of people. And, a lot of people have the reactions that, like I said, they either breaks them or they never want to have to see it again. I can see it over and over and over. To me, it's just adorable.
It's a cute little movie. I mean, I wouldn't mind watching it again. Probably not, every day or something, but it's one of those movies I'd watch every now and then, like it's cute.
So let's get to the point now where I guess we could talk about the stink scores and the stinkometer. I gave this movie a 7. It's got some serious problems with it.
Tell them what the stink score is exactly.
Oh yeah. Well, so basically the higher the stink score, the stinkier the movie is, the lower the stink score, maybe it's a movie that doesn't really have too many problems. This movie has a number of problems. I think we mentioned the cinematography. We mentioned the overbearing music. We mentioned some of the acting isn't really the greatest, so I wanted to give it a 7, but it certainly is better than some of the worst movies. It does not break the cardinal sin of filmmaking much, which we've always said is to make a boring film. There are some sections that are kind of dull, I'm not going to lie. But if you can get past that, I think you'll find that this is a very endearing film that's just fun. And it's a great way to you know, sort of introduce your kids into the world of silly, strange, you know, stinky B-movies.
Yeah, and when you're saying, like, it's got boring moments, they don't last very long, no. You know. So, I mean, most scenes in this movie don't last very long, so.
I thought it was more of an 8. I did think it was a little dull. The music, of course, gets to you after a while.
You talked about doing your hands.
Yeah, I could have checked my phone several times, updated Facebook, sent a few text messages, and gone back to the movie and felt like I didn't miss anything.
Yeah, I know Continuity Monkey drank a 40 at one point.
Yeah, so I have to give it at least an 8.
Yeah, and I gave it an 8 as well because I just, you know, it's got too many bad issues with it that make it not great. It's a fun, enjoyable movie when it's not
cute.
Boring,
yeah.
You know. It's definitely very cute. It's, like, it feels like a movie made by a bunch of friends who got together and made a movie.
Yeah.
And tried to put some story into it, you know.
I think what could have helped this movie along is if Slingshot had been younger. If Slingshot had been maybe 8 or 7, something like that. So it appeals to the movie that this is kind of shot for. I think this should not have been shot for 12 or 13 year olds. They're going to find this movie very boring. They're not going to put up with it.
Mm-hmm.
But someone who's more like 7 or 8 years old, I think they could probably like it. And to see a character their own age would make it even more interesting.
I was like thinking about that. Like when I was, you know, this probably, I still don't think I would have liked this movie as a kid, honestly. I don't think I would have got it, you know, like I would have been kind of bored with him, you know, I like nowadays I get all the, you know, snarky behavior and all the sarcasticness and everything. But I just would have probably looked at this movie as a kid and just been like, this is just too boring and not interesting enough, you know, going on. There's I was a kid that grew up watching movies like Ghostbusters, but still, movies like that kind of, I mean, there just had to be stuff going on all the time, you know, or whatever. And this movie just didn't have that necessarily going. So I don't think I would have enjoyed this back then, especially as a 13 or 14, which is when I, you know.
But if you were 7 or 8 years old, maybe?
I'm still thinking no. I'm like, I don't think so. Like, I think this movie, like, as an adult, I can maybe appreciate it a little bit more. But as a kid, I probably would have been like, you know, I would have rather had Barney.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Like, there's something else.
Barney doesn't have Joe Estevez, and it doesn't have Conrad Brooks, and it certainly does not have Sandra Shuker and her little cut-off jeans with the pockets showing through.
Well, when I was 7, I didn't care about that. You know, girls were icky to me at 7.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Not me. But yeah, no, I understand. There's not everybody is going to like this particular film, even if you're an aficionado of independent cinema or, you know, let's just face it, bad films in general. But to me, there's a certain charm that this film has that a lot of films do not. And I like to watch it. If I saw it once a month for the rest of my life, I'd be pretty happy.
Well, there you go. So, all right. So let's let everybody know. Check us out on Indie Film Cafe on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. I think that's it of those social media things. There's a new thing called Vero I forgot to mention before.
Vero.
I have no idea what that is necessarily, but I know it's a social media thing. I have it.
Yeah.
I have it. I'm trying
you
to figure it out.
You don't know what it is.
I've actually not heard very good things about it.
Yeah, well,
unfortunately,
it's, you know, it's a new social media app, so they're trying. We're not on We're not on Snapchat yet. That might be kind of fun to do because, you know, you just, well, the snaps only last like a day. So,
yeah.
We're on Instagram though, right?
Yeah, we are on Instagram. So we're going to be taking pictures.
And we're on Podbean and then we're also on Stringer?
Stitcher.
Stitcher.
We're also on Stitcher.
Stitcher, Stringers, very similar sounding.
It could very well be.
I'm not saying you did a bad job with figuring out the title, but yeah.
Well, and then we do have the web page that's being worked on by our Helping Monkeys, and hopefully will be coming live any day now.
Yeah, and we also might have a live event at some point.
That's right. So we're working on doing a local live event. We will let everybody know as soon as we iron out all the details and Cottonwood Monkey goes over and breaks a few legs, and we'll get some stuff done.
Yeah, that'll be great.
Kicking butt and taking names.
I'm thinking, what else did we have? We have one other thing I was thinking about.
I don't know if you ever did anything with Reddit.
Oh, yeah. No.
Yeah, I didn't think so. It's not fertile country for us.
Social media is just, it's so frustrating to just do so. We need a social media person.
We do.
To kind of take over, No, but somebody who's not constantly busy doing something else. Like somebody who's concentrating just on us because, You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And get more followers and more money and more.
Well, there you go.
That's Patreon. I forgot Patreon.
We definitely could use your help on Patreon. So
$1.
Anything that you could donate, but even $1 a month would be a huge help to us. In all seriousness, we could definitely use your help. But one of the good things is that now we are broadcasting from a new studio space. So this is a good thing. So we'll be able to do our podcast here. We'll be able to do some of our videos here. And so hopefully when we do have a new video that's going to be coming out soon, you'll get to see what our new space looks like. So we are on the move. We are trying to do more things and better things, but we can also use your help in that regard. So we appreciate anybody who's donated some money to us in the past, and we thank anybody who's thinking about it in the future, and we could definitely use your help.
Definitely use it. So thank you guys. I think that's it. I think that's all the different we're on YouTube. Oh my goodness, I forgot the YouTube. Yep. We're on YouTube, Indie Film Cafe. Check us out on there. We've got a bunch of videos. We just did another one today, and we're gonna do more probably on our own as well as owns. We're gonna do on our own as well as coming back here and doing some more stuff here too. So hopefully, at least once a week or something or something like that, we'll be able to come here and do some more stuff. So hopefully more podcasts for you guys, too, more than just, every 2 weeks.
Right. And we'd love to hear some more feedback from you guys as well. So if you get onto any of these social media groups that we are or anything on YouTube, please send us an email. Give us some comments. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, definitely. And all right, well, keep watching those B movies with us. Enjoy. I guess check out Roller Gator. It's not the worst movie ever.
It's adorable.
It's fun. It's not boring. Sort of boring, but not very boring. It's mostly exciting and fun and kind of cool.
Drink a couple beers and have pizza, a greasy pizza to go with it. You'll enjoy it.
Bring your phone. Make sure you have your phone handy just in case, or whatever. But thank you guys. Hope you guys enjoy the show. And check us back soon when we're going to be doing Airborne.
Yay.
So another rollerblading movie.
All right, because you can't get enough of that.
I can't get enough rollerblades. All right.
Later, Gator.
Later, Gators.
Bye.